It's almost 2 minutes past two. Start all over. It's almost 2 minutes past 5 p.m. Stay tuned for Advocating for Justice with Arthur Schwartz here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. And while that program is on the air, please consider becoming a financial supporter by calling 212-209-2950 or go to give to WBAI.org online. Okay, stay tuned for Advocating for Justice coming up.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM. I want to do my usual pitch, and I may do it a little bit longer because my guest seems to be delayed. Everybody who listens should know, maybe they don't know, this radio station and four other radio stations around the United States are owned by a foundation called the Pacifica Foundation, which goes back to 1946. And we also have affiliated stations, about 200 affiliated stations all over the United States that take some of Pacifica's programming, give us other programming, and that participate in the governance of Pacifica. Pacifica is a not-for-profit foundation, which has had a long history of principally surviving on contributions from people like you who are listening to this show. It costs a lot of money to run five radio stations. It costs a lot of money just to run WBAI, and that's one of the least expensive stations to run in the United States because of the incredible work that our staff does and our general manager, program director, who basically take on multiple hats. But it still costs us probably around $1.4 million a year for WBAI to be on the air. And we have stayed on the air more than 60 years with listener contributions, with that enormous budget, which has been higher. Because people contribute money to WBAI. We don't get any commercials. We are considering doing some underwriting from nonprofits, but we don't get any commercials. We live entirely by contributions from members and also bequests from people who die and people actually leave WBAI Pacifica in their wills. In the last week, I just processed two such donations. They weren't very large, a couple of $1,000, but that money adds up. And one of the things that WBAI has avoided doing, which many public sector radio stations don't do, is having a week where you don't hear any regular programming and you have fundraising going on. WBAI has stopped doing that and has an occasional program where we pitch, you know, giving to the station in return for various items, gifts, books, videos, and we have Gary Knoll gives away various health products in return for donations to WBAI. Me right now, for this show, I'm just giving away the show. And The reason I'm saying this is because I would like people who are listening while we wait for our guest, and I'm going to talk about what we're going to talk about in a minute. I'd like people to go to WBAI.org, www.WBAI.org, and make a donation, become a WBAI buddy. It's just as easy as making a recurring contribution to your favorite progressive politician, be it Bernie Sanders or anybody else, AOC. AOC, who got her media start right here on this show in July 2017, before anybody knew who she was. We do that. We make it possible for people who don't have any other outlet to the world, any other media outlet, to get their word out, to talk to the public, to tell their story, to talk about their point of view. And we need your contributions in order to do that. If 10 people who are listening right now went to WBAI.org and made a contribution, monthly contribution, that would pay for 20% of my show over the course of the next year. $25 every month, each, that would pay, sorry, it would pay for 10 show, it would pay for 10 shows, not 20% of my shows. So please do that. I'm going to play a broadcast that was put out by an entity in California called More Perfect Union about the subject of the first subject of our, show. While I may try to move up our second guest, since our first guest, I was told, is in the middle of contract negotiations. But, let's, Reggie, if we could put on that clip from More Perfect Union, and let's start talking about the strike going on in California.
In U.S. history.
Because the University of California is paying its student workers poverty wages.
We make up one-fifth of the workforce, and we only take up 1% of the UC's budget.
We don't think a university should act like a corporation, and we're going to put a stop to it through workers' power.
We do, I don't know, somewhere between like 70 and 90% of the labor at the University of California. There's just no way that this university will operate, and we will continue to stay out on strike until we win.
University fucks around, the university finds out.
This is really unprecedented that four bargaining units have come together to strike at the same time. So we're not just here at UCLA, we're all across UC at 10.
Really important demands that we normally wouldn't be able to. And there are so many shared conditions that we have in our work environments.
We're fighting for living wages for postdocs, visa fees waived. Child care subsidies for working parents, as well as transit subsidies.
We're fighting for capped class sizes because we really care about the students' learning conditions.
Some of the key things I'm fighting for are ending rent burden and earning a cost of living adjustment. I'm also fighting for, you know, more sustainable public transportation.
As TAs, we want to raise the brightest generation of students, right? And we can't do that when we are looking for, you know, wondering how are we going to make next month's rent, choosing between feeding ourselves and skipping meals, or some students even live out of their car, some TAs. The average UC worker makes $23K on average. If you live on campus near UCLA, like the graduate student housing, it's like $1,400 to $1,700 a month for rent. So you're making about $1,800 a month, and then you're just paying that back to the university as your landlord. Increasing our wages would just transform the university into what it envisions itself to be. You think the University of California is a progressive system, but it's not.
How do I get by? Well, I don't have much of a social life. It's just extremely infantilizing as a 34-year-old woman. Quite frankly, it's really hard to, you know, be able to have friends my own age when I don't make enough to go out with people. I am a very proud cat mom, but, you know, unfortunately not a mother. That's something I would like to be able to say at this age, but I've had to make the decision between, you know, continuing to work at the UC and having a family.
Those were interviews with some of the 48,000 members of UAW and the United Auto Workers Union, which is organized teaching assistants all over the University of California, who have been on strike now for a week. 48,000 teaching assistants. It's the biggest strike in many years that's going on in the United States. And it has brought the University of California to a shutdown. And what these folks are saying, and it's inspiring, teaching assistants have always been among the lowest paid people in the economy. They're often paid minimum wage. They don't get health benefits. They don't get housing benefits. Many of them are also graduate students who are paying full tuition at the same time that they're getting $15 an hour or less, depending on what year it was. And they are organizing all over the United States. A lot of them work at these universities. I know someone close to me is a teaching assistant, gets $15 an hour and pays $65,000 a year tuition to go to, and that's what all the students that she's teaching get. It's one of the most exploited groups of people in the United States. While some of these schools build up endowments, right here in New York, NYU has something like a $59 billion endowment. It is these universities are gigantic, and they exploit their staffs. And people, up to now, there have been a few schools where graduate student teachers, NYU has a graduate student union. The New School has a graduate student union. But many, I think Columbia has a graduate student meaning graduate student teaching union. This is the biggest strike that we are seeing in America today. But we are going to move on to our second guest, who is Marianne Pizzitola. Good afternoon, Marianne.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, so we are, Marianne is a, she's had quite a life. Marianne is a retired firefighter. There weren't too many firefighters when you started there, right? Too many female firefighters.
I was EMS. Yes, I worked in that.
Oh, all right. There weren't too many of those either.
No, there weren't.
She's a retired EMS worker, which is part of the fire department.
Yes.
Was a 9/11 responder. Mm-hmm. We're getting pretty far down the road from 9/11, right? It's been 21 years since that happened. And there are lots of people around. I've had two kids since then. And, you know, to them, it's just this story, right? Or some pictures, right? Some of us lived through it. But now she is become a organizer and a litigant and is doing some amazing organizing and work. And I wanted people to hear about what's going on because it is a fight that is far from resolved, but where the noose seems to be getting tied tighter around a number of players, which Marianne can tell us about. So what is it that you're doing your organizing around?
Preserving healthcare, and ironically, this wasn't too far from what I did 20 years ago after 9/11. I organized retirees then to fight for the protection of our healthcare because they didn't think we were getting sick from 9/11. So I very quickly got together. The city then was trying to say we weren't getting ill from World Trade Center. And then the fire department was trying to force us in retirement to only be monitored by them rather than one of the other centers of excellence, either through Stony Brook Hospital or Mount Sinai. So I wanted the choice. I shouldn't be forced to go back to my former employer for medical monitoring and treatment. I did my own research. I realized that there was previous case law on this. I wrote myself a brief, sent it to NIOSH CDC, and within 3 months, they agreed with me. that I should be able to go to any center of excellence. So when this happened, this was like 2.0. All of a sudden, we're getting advised by the city of New York that the city was looking to privatize our Medicare, force us into a Medicare Advantage plan, take away all of our other choices. And if we so elected to keep the plan that we had been currently in, they were going to charge us a penalty premium upwards of $200 a month per person.
All right, let me stop you at that point. So New York City retirees, and that means somebody who worked enough years to be eligible for a pension, right? That's what a retiree is. And that means you worked, what, 10 years?
You vest, well, it depends what pension you're in. You could vest after 5, you could vest after 10, you could vest after 20, and your health care was guaranteed to you after 10.
So you retire and you're guaranteed to get health care. And before you're 65, who pays for the health care?
Well, City of New York offers.
Let me take even a step back. For most city workers, or maybe all city workers, if you take the basic health plan that the city offers to city employees, what is it cost you?
Nothing.
Which is amazing.
Well, and remember, we gave up wages, benefits, increases. Our salaries were traditionally lower than our private counterparts to have that. And we always knew that was like a form of deferred compensation for us.
Because most, as a lawyer that represents public and private sector unions, in the private sector, people have been paying for their health care for 40 years. They've been contributing towards health care. In some employment settings, even where there's unions, people are could be paying as much as $1,000 a month towards their health benefit, which might cost $20,000 a year. They're actually paying more than their employer is paying towards their health care. Although Obamacare made that a little better, but that meant you had to accept to get a free or low cost benefit. You had to, this is in the private sector, you had to agree to take a fairly stripped down health plan that requires you to go to only certain providers, or maybe doesn't even cover anything but your annual visits. So that, you know, but most people in the private sector pay a lot of money towards the healthcare. City workers don't pay anything. So if you retire, to say, at 55, so you had enough time, do you still get free healthcare from the city?
If as long as you're vested, as long as you are collected, you're either an employee collecting a salary or you are retired collecting a pension, and you're vested for your healthcare benefits, you qualify for healthcare. And yes, if you choose the basic plans, there is no premium. If you want one of the other plans that they offer, there would be a pay-up premium for that. And they do offer some pay-up plans.
A pay-up meaning it has a better benefit, and so it's more expensive.
Correct.
All right. And then you hit 65.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens now? You hit 65. That's when Medicare kicks in. I mean, some people have it earlier, but Medicare for most people kicks in at 65. What happens?
Correct. So you're supposed to register for Medicare's A and B, and you can choose either a supplemental plan offered by the City of New York, or you can choose a Medicare Advantage plan.
So what's A and B? We're talking to people who probably a lot of retirees don't even understand this, but what is Medicare A and what is Medicare B?
So Medicare A is for hospitalization. There's no premium for that. Medicare B pays your medical up to 80% of your medical bills. So that would leave you with 20% cost, which is why you need a supplemental plan. So the City of New York actually offers us a few benefits. Your Medicare traditional pays the first 80% of your medical bills, and your Part A pays for your hospitalization. So now you just need a small, what they call supplemental or Medigap plan that would pay for the 20% that Medicare doesn't cover. So our plans are a small carve out of what most people's plans would be, because yours, for example, would have to cover 100% of your health care. where Medicare covers my first 80% of my bills. So that would be a supplement or a Medigap, and that was the plan in this situation we were trying to protect.
So we're not talking about the Medicare. Medicare is something you get, quote unquote, for free. You've been paying taxes your whole life to get it.
Well, you pay premium for that.
and then Medicare B is like you what people call, it's your doctor plan.
Correct. That's where you're
thinking and that would be called major medical. It pays, you go to the doctor, you pay the doctor some amount of money, you pay the doctor 20% of your bill, and the Medicare pays the rest of the bill, you hope.
Correct.
And then there's these supplemental plans that pay the part that that Medicare doesn't pay.
Correct.
And that's what this fight is about.
Was that they were trying to force us into a Medicare Advantage plan, which is a Part C plan, which takes your A and B and makes C, and it rolls it all together. And sometimes they throw in some extra perks in there. But the difference is between traditional Medicare with a supplement and Medicare Advantage is Medicare Advantage is a privatized Medicare plan. It is not Medicare. And sometimes what they do is, they'll give you some added perks in there, like a Fitbit or a couple of rides to your doctor, but you are now you're now held to prior authorizations. You have to get permission. Your doctor has to get permission for every treatment test that they request, that they want for you. You're narrowed to a network. If you go out of network, you pay. There's a lot of issues with Medicare Advantage. It is a privatized, managed network.
So how can Medicare be privatized? I thought it's a government program.
Medicare Part A and B are a private program. Medicare Part C, Medicare Advantage, is privatized Medicare.
But you said it rolls A and B.
It takes it all together. Right. So in 1996-ish, I believe, under President Clinton, they offered Medicare Advantage as an option for people that did want it. It was to give you an option, something in addition to traditional Medicare. This time, what they were doing to us city retirees was that they were forcing us, or auto-enrolling us is the term, auto-enrolling you into that Medicare Advantage plan, which would take you out of federal Medicare through CMS, which is Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. They would have to disenroll you from that and enroll you into this plan. Why were they doing this?
Because why would anybody give up government paid for health care to begin with?
That's a really good question. We didn't want to. But the reason why the city of New York was looking to do this was because the federal government subsidizes these Medicare Advantage plans and pays the insurance company to administer your health care. So thereby, the city would no longer have to pay for our health insurance. It would now be transferred to the private insurer. So they were saving money, and they had promised the unions under the umbrella of the Municipal Labor Committee, if you do this, you put your retirees into that plan, get them off our balance sheet, we'll give you that money that we were going to spend on them.
So if you're on Medicare, there's a premium. There is a premium, even though you've been paying into it your whole life.
Yes.
So for retirees at the city was paying, that was part of what they did. They paid your premium into Medicare. And now they want to push people into this Medicare Advantage, which would absolve them of the need to pay for, this is a question, absolve them of the need to pay for the Medicare of those retirees? Is that the point?
Yes, it would absolve them of the costs of paying for city retiree Medicare eligible plans. Absolutely.
And who pays for that? Now, when you go to Medicare Advantage, if you get forced over, who pays for that?
It is subsidized by the federal government to the insurance company. They administer your health plan. They administer all the prior authorizations, and you have to utilize their network. That becomes your health care.
Okay. Just let me just take a little break. This is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM. We are talking to Marianne Pizzitola, who is leading the fight to forced privatization. Sounds like an interesting word. Forced privatization of retiree health benefits in New York. Why? What's the matter? If it's being pushed from one government program to another government paid for program, why is that a bad thing?
You're losing the control of your health care. Under traditional Medicare, you can see any doctor that accepts Medicare. Under Medicare Advantage, you have to use their network of physicians. Under traditional Medicare, you don't have prior authorizations. Under Medicare Advantage, you do. That means anytime you need a procedure or a test, your doctor has to ask the insurance company for permission. The Health and Human Services Office of the Inspector General has conducted two studies, one in 18 and one in 2022, that was released, that showed that Medicare Advantage plans inherently delay or deny care wrongly, and this has harmed people. So why would you put yourself in a situation? Maybe for healthier retirees, Medicare Advantage would be fine, but if you are an older retiree or have some cognitive impairment or you have a lot of health needs, putting yourself to constantly have to use their prior authorization process or using their network, if you want a physician, like for example, where I am, there my physicians won't take a Medicare Advantage plan. And then you constantly see doctors who do choose to try to participate in them, but due to either the reimbursement or the paperwork request or the prior authorization, they don't want to be bothered and they end up backing out. Our own attorney is on a Medicare Advantage plan and his doctors are dropping him.
So, but isn't that, I recall 20 years ago when Clinton first became president, there was an effort to reduce health insurance costs by having what they called managed care plans that a lot of people in the private sector were forced into, right? The employer said, if you want it free or if you want to only get it for $10 a week or whatever, you have to go on a managed care plan. And then if you want to have your full choice of doctors, then you have to pay more. So isn't that what people have been doing? Well, maybe not public sector workers. So I'm talking about people in the private sector. Is that basically what we're talking about, or do you even have the option to go outside the network?
On a Medicare Advantage plan, you can go outside the network. The problem is you would have to pay for the doctor. If the doctor refuses to accept payment from the insurer, you would have to pay the physician up front and then hope when you submit the bill for reimbursement, they will now review it for medical necessity. If they determine that the bill wasn't medically necessary, the procedure wasn't medically necessary, they're not going to reimburse you. So you're putting yourself at risk. We don't have these problems with traditional Medicare. You need a test, you need a procedure, you need to see a doctor, you go. The doctor takes Medicare, you go. These are not things. Now you have to worry about having the administrative faculties to be able to handle all of these issues when if you're sick, you may not be able to.
So we're going to take a little break, little music break, because I get to play DJ two times a show. The song that I picked out to play midway, and it's a good bridge into the rest of our discussion, is
okay.
A song from Billy Bragg called There Is Power in a Union.
Bleed all amounts to nothing. the trenches full of mud. War's always been the boss's wiser.
So we talked about what the issue is, and when did the city start trying to push people into these Medicare Advantage plans? How did this issue first come up?
We heard about it in a newspaper article. No one told us. Our former unions didn't tell us. The city didn't tell us. It broke in a news story. And then that summer, it was like June, July, August of 2021, we received a letter from the city stating they had this great new custom plan that they were making for us, and it was just for us, and they were going to auto-enroll us into it. We only had 30 days to, like, opt out, and that was it. So I started looking at it. I didn't like the idea. I thought it was a diminishment of my benefit. I always knew that my union, I remember Lillian Roberts from DC37 saying, never privatize Medicare, never privatize your health care, never, 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 never. And now all of a sudden it's happening, and it was coming from my former union. I looked into it. I didn't like the plan. I was concerned about it. We started reviewing it. We were watching it very closely. And then finally, come August 21, I sent out about 40 emails, 17 people showed up, 5 people volunteered. I formed a whole corporation, an organization. We on Friday, August 13th, by that Monday, I had sent my incorporating documents into the state of New York to incorporate as a nonprofit organization. I started a Facebook page, a website, a PayPal.
And it is called what?
My organization is called the New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees.
Okay.
And we formed as a nonprofit organization for the purpose of protecting and defending retiree health benefits or retiree benefits. And we took off from there. It's been a runaway train ever since.
What do you mean by a runaway train?
Well, literally, we started as like 5 people. We grew to, I think, a board of 15. We started out with 1 person on my Facebook page, me, our board, 5. And then I think a month later, we were at 4,000. Today, we're at almost 20,000. Plus, we have another email list and a YouTube channel and other social media where people aren't on Facebook, but they're on Twitter, or they're not on Facebook, but they're on Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. We have all of those channels. And we hired 2 attorneys, 2 law firms. We started out with 3 originally. We're down to 2. One was to just help us get off the ground. He wasn't looking to litigate. And we sued the city of New York in September of 2021 for violation of the administrative code 12-126 of New York City.
How would they, what was the law what they were violating?
12-126 states the city must pay for the full cost of a specific plan called the HIP HMO rate, the full cost of health insurance up to the HIP HMO plan rate for every employee, retiree, and their dependent. And our position was that rate, which increases every year with inflation, whatever the needs of the insurance company is, today that rate sits about $918 per person per month. And that is the benchmark. Yet the city was looking to charge us, if we didn't choose to be in their new Medicare Advantage plan, up to $200 per person per month for our little 20% plan. And that, in our belief, was in violation of the law.
Okay, so you found a lawyer, you filed a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of colleagues like that, a lot of clients who do that. And what is it, you were in Local 2507 of District Council 37, which is the EMS Employees Union, tends to be generally a rather pushy, militant group of people.
Mm-hmm. I was trained well.
what was the reaction of the union movement?
Some unions agreed with us and some unions didn't. And others were confused. my union supports what I'm doing. The uniformed forces support what I'm doing, police and fire. Some of the corrections union, the corrections captains union support what I'm doing. Some of the DC 37 unions, civilian unions support what I'm doing. DC 37 itself does not, UFT does not. They've been two of the most vocal unions opposing what we've done. But we don't understand why. And we keep trying to explain to them. I even met with Michael Mogul while I was at a political event in Puerto Rico a week or 2 weeks ago to explain to them. We have this one pager that it says, don't amend the administrative code, because right now they've been trying to change the administrative code that we won our case on after our Supreme Court win. This was before our appellate argument.
We'll get into that. Okay. So the city's response was that they want to change that law that you told us about before that says that the city has to pay for everybody's health care.
Yes.
Up to a certain dollar amount.
Mm-hmm. Up to a certain.
And so who's proposing that? So this proposal first came around from the de Blasio administration.
Yes, it did.
And it's survived into the current mayor's administration, Mayor Adams. And you said there are two big unions, District Council 37 and the United Federation of Teachers, who don't agree with you.
No.
And there are the uniforms do agree with you. You would think that uniform unions are a pretty powerful force in the city of New York. There's probably 200,000 of them, two people that they represent, between the police and fire and corrections and sanitation. So why hasn't that been enough to stop the march forward of this effort?
You would think that that would be democratic, right? But under the umbrella of the Municipal Labor Committee, there is this weighted voting rule that they have one vote per every 250 members. So primarily, if the UFT and DC 37 vote the same way, they have the controlling two-thirds vote of the entire Municipal Labor Committee. There are about 100 or so unions within the MLC. I can't give you an exact number because even under FOIL, they won't tell me how many unions are in the MLC or which unions are in the MLC. I do know that there's at least 102. And as long as the UFT and DC 37 vote the same way, they have the controlling vote because of the size of their memberships, which is why on the vote to change the code on September 8th, the MLC, 48 unions voted yes, 11 unions voted no, and that would be your uniformed unions. And then 40 unions didn't even show up. Four unions abstained. So you have an apathy there because of this weighted voting system. They feel that their votes don't even matter. So their point is, why even bother showing up?
And just again, for station ID, this is Arthur Schwartz on Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM, NWBAI.org. And we are talking to Marianne Pizzatola of the, what was the name of your organization again?
New York City Organization of Public Service Retirees.
That's such a great name. Who is spearheading an effort that at least she has 20,000 people who've signed up to be part of her group, and lots of unions supporting her who were trying to stop the privatization of the city's Medicare benefit program and the forced privatization, right? So this bill that's in the city council, what would the bill do?
It hasn't hit the city council yet. It is a proposed bill that Labor Relations and the Municipal Labor Committee drafted. And what it would do would take out of, it would remove, they give the option of it being the law staying the same. So what they did was the law states that the city will pay the full cost of health insurance up to the HIP HMO rate for every employee, retiree, and their dependent. Now they want to put a comma there and say, or in the alternative, any plan that the MLC and the city choose to be the benchmark plan for any class of individuals. Now this disturbs us because this law has been around since 1967. It was legislated at the the birth of Medicare, and it protects everybody equally. Now all of a sudden you want to allow the city and the MLC to choose which benchmark plan is for any class of individuals, and they don't define in the proposed statute what is a class. They decided to put it in a side letter when some of the uniform unions got upset about this fuzzy area of their legislation. So they put it in a side letter, which disturbs me because a side letter can be changed more easily than a statute, and it can be negotiated away, as has other side letters in collective bargaining. So I don't really feel comfortable about that. And now I'm allowing the city and the MLC to choose what benchmark plan for me. Why did that become an issue? Because in this litigation, the city chose that the health insurance plan that they wanted to choose for Medicare eligible retirees was this Medicare Advantage plan, and put a dollar value of $7.50 to it. That would now become the benchmark for Medicare eligible retirees, which means that would be the only amount that they would have to pay up to, not the HIP HMO rate of $918. So if they did leave any other plan on the table for you to select, if you didn't choose their Medicare Advantage plan at $7.50, you chose your supplemental plan that you're in today at almost $200, they would pay $7.50 towards your premium. You would pay the difference. That was a pure cost transfer directly to a retiree.
And the UFT, there's been some talk that some people wouldn't understand. Why is it understood why the UFT is fighting so strongly to in favor of this privatization, or at least the UFT as a union?
Sadly,
in UFT, by the way, for listeners who don't know, is the United Federation of Teachers, which has about 200,000 teachers in it. They have others too, nurses and librarians and others.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Sadly, in 2014, something unprecedented, to my knowledge, happened. It was the first time that a union negotiated a contract that was partially funded by other unions. So they didn't have a raise for 9 years under the Bloomberg administration. When de Blasio came in, they were hungry for a contract. They negotiated a 9-year contract at 14%, I think like $3 million towards their welfare fund, but they had to commit to two things. $1 billion from the citywide health insurance stabilization fund. This is the fund that goes to fund their welfare funds and healthcare, had to be conveyed to the city to offset this round of collective bargaining. And they had to get the Municipal Labor Committee to agree to recurring healthcare savings going forward. If not, he would have to be charged for whatever the value was that he couldn't come up with to pay off the rest of his contract. So he had to commit. He had to get the MLC to commit.
He is Michael Mulgrew.
Michael Mulgrew, the president of the United Federation of Teachers. Now, I also told you he has a controlling vote of the Municipal Labor Committee. As long as he and DC 37's executive director, Henry Garrido, agree, then the motion passes. There's your 2/3 vote of your membership. So he was able to convince Henry to agree to healthcare savings and conveying the $1 billion from the union's stabilization fund for healthcare to pay off for that round of collective bargaining.
So
that's what got us in this mess.
The unions have a stabilization fund that they can put in to keep health care benefits?
It's funded two ways. The city, through collective bargaining, has to put about $35 or $40 million a year into it. And then it's to equalize the health care rates between GHI, which is one plan, and HIP, which is the other plan, the benchmark plan in the statute. When the HIP plan's higher, the difference between the two plans, money goes into the fund. When the GHI rate is higher, money comes out to equalize it, so you have two free plans. This fund also provides welfare fund money to all of the union's welfare funds, and there's about 60 or 80 different welfare funds.
And a welfare fund is something that provides drug coverage, dental coverage, glasses coverage. Unions get to pick their own, right?
Got it.
So somehow the money that was in that fund or that was supposed to go into that fund went to the UFT raise?
Went towards the UFT raises, and that year's round of collective bargaining. Yes.
It was just not just the UFT. It went towards everybody's raises.
Well, according to Mr. Mulgrew, but according to his contract, the UFT, the United Federation of Teachers MOA, Memorandum of Agreement, states $1 billion will be conveyed to the city, and it's in his contract. So my opinion is, based on that terminology, it went to offset his contract. When I speak to him, he says it didn't just pay for his raises. It went towards that year's round of collective bargaining. I might be splitting hairs at this point.
So that means the unions got to get this. The city basically took $1 million out of this healthcare fund.
Billion.
And put it towards $1 billion, I'm sorry. And put it towards?
Raises.
Okay. And so now what? There's no money left in the fund? Is that?
They're claiming it's bankrupt.
And that fund would have, if that fund was still in existence, the city wouldn't be worrying about getting rid of its healthcare costs?
Probably not. Well, remember, they also did agree. Well, that would have offset the cost of HIP and GHI and funded their welfare funds. But the city, in the teacher's contract, they still had to agree to recurring healthcare savings. So that generated another agreement called the 2014 MLC agreement, which they were trying to save $3.4 billion. They did realize some of those savings in a very creative math way. And then after that agreement expired in 2018, they did another agreement called the 2018 MLC agreement. And this one committed them to $600 million in healthcare savings on a recurring basis going forward from 2021 on.
And how are those savings accomplished?
That was going to be generated by forcing us into a Medicare Advantage plan, removing the city's responsibility from paying for our small 20% supplemental plans and giving the money to the unions to put in the stabilization fund. That's how that $600 million was to be realized.
All right. And because of your organizing, it hasn't happened.
Correct. We preserved the healthcare benefits that were promised to retirees in our employment. We gave up wages. We gave up benefits. We took years of zero raise increases to preserve our benefits. And you always knew as a city employee, you'd never get rich, but you'd have good benefits. This was your form of deferred compensation. You'll have a pension and healthcare for the rest of your life. Now, all of a sudden, we have 14 healthcare plans. The city wants to take away all of those plans and leave us with one, this privatized Medicare Advantage plan, taking away our access to federal Medicare that we've paid into for decades, force us into this private plan. And if you choose not to elect it, then you are going to pay a hefty premium to not. Right.
And then yesterday, a judge ruled in a case, by the way, a judge also ruled that the reduction in the school budgets was illegal, but didn't order them to roll the money back in. Said, don't do it next year. That was what did the court, it's the New York, the appellate division of the Supreme Court.
First,
what did they say about the Medicare Advantage proposal?
They had one question before them. Was they were looked that the city had alleged that the lower court judge, Justice Lyle Frank from the Supreme Court, erred in his interpretation of the administrative code. And the appellate court panel, which is five justices, disagreed with the city and affirmed the lower court's decision, stating that there was no error, that the city had no argument, that the administrative code was very crystal clear. The city will pay the full cost of health insurance up to the specific plan rate, the HIP HMO plan, for every employee, retiree, and their dependent. And any plan that the city offers, they have to pay for if it's under that cap. Period. And that's where we are.
And that's what, and that's, so that law, that became even more imperative for the city and its, and the UFT and DC 37 to get the city council to change the law.
They're trying to change this code that we won our case on because they want to be able to reduce the cost of the plans. If they say, you're not going to have access to this Medicare traditional with a supplement anymore. If you want that, you're going to have to pay for it. They want to change the benchmark pegged to us. Yes, so they are trying to change the code. What they don't understand is all of the pitfalls in Medicare Advantage or in changing the code. This code protected us since 1967, and it's there for a reason. And it's not in many collective bargaining agreements because you have this statute. The statute provides two things. Medicare B reimbursement, the city actually reimburses you your premiums for Medicare B, and it also pays, it also sets the benchmark of what the city will pay up to, and it's equal across the board. It's not one benchmark for you, one benchmark for me, not one benchmark for uniformed, one benchmark for civilian. It's not like that. And we got away from that in 1964, where the uniformed services in their first contracts had had health insurance and no civilian did. The mayor wanted this to be equal citywide. There's a lot of history here. It's like we're going back in time.
So the last question I have is anybody in the city council slightly interested in putting forward this bill? And anybody willing to take on Marianne Pizzitola?
The city council so far is not interested in taking up this bill, because you have to remember something, Arthur. These plans are their plans. You're actually asking the city council to diminish their own health benefits. That's, you know, and there's a lot of threats here. There's a threat from the UFT and DC 37 are threatening if the council doesn't do what they say, then they're going to suffer. I think Henry told us, four council persons that told me personally, Henry told them, if you don't do what I tell you to do, you'll suffer the wrath of DC 37 employees. Then there's another threat that came out today, that the mayor is threatening city council people if they don't change this code, then he's going to withhold their funding for their district projects. Like, where did we lose our compass? These are people. This is healthcare. We earned this. We paid for this. There's no reason why they should be selling us off like a garage sale for their current raises. Then as labor, I have to tell you, with the labor relations background, then they're not doing their job, because we should be able to sit at a table and collectively bargain a raise for them without harming retirees like we've done for, I don't know, 75 years. This doesn't make any sense.
So what's the next step for you? I only have 1 minute left. If people want to get involved, how do they get involved?
Our website is nycretirees.org. We have a Facebook page by the name of our organization, the NYC Organization of Public Service Retirees. Or you can just Google search my name, Marianne Pizzitola. I'll come up in all different places, and join us. Join our Facebook page. Join our website. Donate to our organization. We have a current campaign right now for city council workers, city council members, to tell them, please do not change the code. Preserve history. Preserve what we earn. Protect us equally. And let's work on this together. We've been demanding meetings. Hopefully one day, maybe next week, the mayor, the council, labor could sit with us. And let's see if we can help them out of this hole that they're in. But the answer isn't to diminish a healthcare benefit that retired labor earned and paid for. That, to me, I think will hurt the labor movement and your ability, the city's ability to retain or attract workers in the future if they know that they could work for you for 20, 30, 40 years and then all of a sudden lose your health benefits or everything you earned in retirement.
Thank you so much, Marianne. We will get back to you and find out what's going on. Appreciate you coming on a little bit early. I appreciate your work. I'm sure most people listening to this show appreciate your work, and good luck.
Thank you. We need it.
So this is the end this week of Advocating for Justice. We'll be back next week. We're going to do some reports from the state of Georgia and that special election that's happening again with the Reverend Warnock and some former football player whose name I don't even want to remember. So we'll be back next Wednesday, 5 o'clock on WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And I'll see everyone then. And we're going to close out with another song.
Just can feel slow when you're driving. But if you hit someone, it's terrifyingly fast. Drivers, look for pedestrians and cyclists and slow your turns to 5 miles per hour. Speeding ruins lives. Slow down. Brought to you by the Vision Zero Initiative.
COVID-19 variants are still around. It's a good thing there are new boosters targeted to take them out. The new bivalent boosters are here. Bullseye. Everyone 5 and older should get boosted today. To learn more, visit nyc.gov/vaccinefinder or call 877-VAX4NYC.
That message brought to you by the New York City Department of Health. This is WBAI New York.
Hi, listeners. Don't want to use the website or the call center to contribute to WBAI? That's okay. Please feel free to send your check or money order to WBAI, 3rd floor, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Please make your check or money order out to Pacifica-WBAI. We thank you for your donation and hope that you will spread the word and tell your friends. And please keep on listening.
And the previous program was Advocating for Justice with Arthur Schwartz, heard Wednesdays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by Economic Update with Economic Update with Richard Wolf. And while I still have a little bit of time to remind y'all out there that if you haven't done it yet, please consider becoming a financial supporter to this radio station by calling 212-209-2950 or go to give to WBAI.org online. Yeah,